ॐ हरिः ॐ तत्सत् श्रीगुरुभ्यो नमः
हरिः
ॐ सदाशिवसमारम्भाम् शङ्कराचार्यमध्यमाम् अस्मदाचार्यपर्यन्ताम् वन्दे गुरुपरम्पराम् श्रुतिस्मृतिपुराणानाम् आलयम् करुणालयम् नमामि भगवत्पादशङ्करम् लोकशङ्करम् शङ्करम् शङ्कराचार्यम् केशवम् बादरायणम् सूत्रभाष्यकृतौ वन्दे भगवन्तौ पुनः पुनः ॐ हरिः ॐ तत्सत् श्रीगुरुभ्यो नमः हरिः ॐ आप्यायन्तु ममाङ्गानि वाक् प्राणश्चक्षुश्रोत्रमथो बलमिन्द्रियाणि च सर्वाणि सर्वम् ब्रह्म उपनिषदम् माहम् ब्रह्म निराकुर्याम् मा ब्रह्म निराकरोत् अनिराकरणमस्त्वनिराकरणम् मे अस्तु तदात्मैरतेय उपनिषत्सु धर्मास्ते मयि सन्तु ते मयि सन्तु ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः
वी हैव टू सी द लास्ट बिट ऑफ फर्स्ट सेक्शन ऑफ केन उपनिषद We've seen the last mantra. Yachotrena na shrunoti.
Yachotrena shrunoti.
Na shrunoti.
Na shrunoti.
Yena shrotramidam shrutam.
Yena shrotramidam shrutam.
Tadeva brahmatvam vidhi.
Tadeva brahmatvam vidhi.
Nedam yadidam upasate.
Nedam yadidam upasate.
Like the previous mantras, this verse also conveys the same thing, that you will live for 100 years long. Yatu shrotrena na shrunoti. You have to remember, yatu here means atmanam. Yet Atmanam. Atmanam in what? Objective case. Irandavadu Vetrumai. Atmanam means what? Chaitanyam. When you say Chaitanyatai, Yatmanam, Nashrunoti. Nashrunoti, who does not hear. Does not hear, does not listen to the Atma means what? No. The one, there is another person there. Manushyaha na shrunoti atmanam. Through what? Shrotrena. The one who, a human being, does not hear through the sense organ, the power of hearing called shrotram. And yena atmana, okay, by which alone, even the ear becomes, the power of hearing becomes known. Shrutam here means known actually. The power of hearing being there is known because of whose presence and whose blessings. That is pure consciousness, Atma. That Atma is in fact Brahman. Tad Atma eva Brahma. So Tad stands for what? You. You means Atma. The Atma is Brahman. Na idam yadu idam upasate. Not anything other than that Atma. Anything other than Atma is not Brahman. We have seen that and we also moved on to the next one. Yat pranena na praniti.
Yat pranena na praniti.
Yena prana praniyate.
Yena prana praniyate.
Tadeva brahmatvam vidhi.
Tadeva brahmatvam vidhi.
Nedam yadidam upasate.
Nedam. Okay.
So again you can say kaschit manushyaha, kaschit purushaha. Okay, manushyaha. Yat, yat again is an objective case. Yat means what? Yadai. Yat means yat yam atmanam. Yat is equal to yam atmanam. Yat chaitanyam. This we do not know chaitanyam, isn't it? So yat, that which pranena na praniti. So pranena na praniti. So praniti literally means what? Breathes. Or here you should take, because the word pranena, the word prana has two meanings. One is mukhya pranaha, another meaning is gauna pranaha. The mukhya pranaha means the physiological, the functions, the function of respiration, inhalation is called pranaha. This another word for prana, gauna pranaha means the organ of smelling, the power of smelling is also called, organ of smell also is called granaha. The granaha, granaha means nose. Nose means what? The power of smelling. The organ of smell is also called what? Gauna pranaha. Why? Because every time we have seen this earlier in another bhashyam, hope you remember this. Why granaha is also called gauna pranaha? Why the power of smelling is called also, is also called pranaha? Because every time you smell something, you have to inhale. Therefore, it's also called gauna pranaha. So here Shankaracharya takes both, okay? So pranena na praniti means, see, a human being, one, does not objectify atma, does not smell the atma, objectify the atma through the organ of smelling. Isn't it? Na vishayi karoti. So pranena na praniti. Yena pranaha praniyate. Yena, by which alone this prana becomes what? Prana is revealed. Praniyate means is objective, is revealed. Pranaha is given. Praniyate means the prana is given. The prana is revealed. Not only the prana is revealed, prana here means the not only the organ of smell is revealed, and also it is lent the capacity to be the revealer of the object called the smell. So praniyate means Atma does two things here. What does it do? Atma reveals the, Atma brings to light the organ of smelling, the power of smelling, and it also blesses that power of smelling with the capacity to illumine the object called smell. So the organ of smelling to come to light, thereby to become existent, it is to be revealed by Atma. And thereby even for it to have the status of being the revealer of the object called the smell also, it needs to be blessed by the Atma. Therefore, being blessed by Atma in two respects. One, to come to existence, to be revealed, through being revealed, and thereby to become the revealer of the power object called the smell. Now, it is blessed by Atma. Therefore, we say here, Yena pranaha praniyate. Therefore, that with which one does not objectify or smell the Atma, that by which one, even the organ of smelling becomes existent, revealed, and also becomes the revealer of the object called the smell, that Atma, that Chaitanya Atma is the thing of Chaitanyam, the Chaitanya Atma alone is Brahman, not anything, any other object of worship. So that is the mantra. We'll see the meaning. Yet, pranena. So pranena. So yet, you know, chaitanyam, atmanam. Pranena, ghranena. అగౌణ ప్రాణేన ఘ్రాణేన. ఘ్రాణేన మీన్స్ త్రూ వన్స్ నోస్, ది పవర్ ఆఫ్ ఆర్గన్ ఆఫ్ స్మెల్లింగ్. అండ్ వాట్ ఈస్ దట్ ఆర్గన్ ఆఫ్ స్మెల్లింగ్? ఇట్ ఈస్ డిస్క్రైబ్డ్ హియర్. ది పవర్ ఆఫ్ స్మెల్లింగ్ ఈజ్ అ ప్రోడక్ట్ ఆఫ్ సాత్విక్ ఆస్పెక్ట్ ఆఫ్ ఎర్త్ ఎలిమెంట్. హోప్ యూ రిమెంబర్ ఆల్ దీస్ థింగ్స్. ది పవర్ ఆఫ్ స్మెల్లింగ్, ఇట్స్ ఆల్ ఓల్డ్ లెసన్స్, ఇట్స్ ఆల్ మేబీ వెరీ ఆల్ మేబీ వెరీ మంటర్ రెడీ నౌ బై నౌ. పార్థివ యూ షుడ్ బి ఏబుల్ టు యూ నాట్ గో ఎక్స్ప్లెయిన్ దీస్ థింగ్స్ బట్ ఐ షల్ ఐ డూ ఇట్. పార్థివ మీన్స్ పృథివీ సంబంధ పార్థివ. ఎనీథింగ్ పర్టైనింగ్ టు పృథివీ ఇస్ కాల్డ్ పార్థివ. ఓకే, ఈవెన్ కింగ్ ఆఫ్ ద ఎర్త్ ఆల్ ఇస్ కాల్డ్ పార్థివ. తమిళ పార్థిపన్. ఓకే, పార్థివ మీన్స్ వాట్? పార్థివ ఎనీథింగ్ పర్టైనింగ్ టు ద ఎర్త్ ఇస్ కాల్డ్ పార్థివ. సో ది కింగ్ ఆఫ్ ద ఎర్త్ ఆల్సో కాల్డ్ పార్థివ. దిస్ ఆర్ పవర్ ఆఫ్ స్మెల్లింగ్ యు నో ఈస్ అ ప్రోడక్ట్ ఆఫ్ సాత్విక్ ఆస్పెక్ట్ ఆఫ్ ఎర్త్ ఎలిమెంట్. దెర్ఫోర్ ఇస్ కాల్డ్ వాట్? పార్థివ. సో పార్థివేన ఘ్రాణేన మీన్స్ he does not talk mean this big nose here. He talks about the subtle power, imperceptible power of smelling, because of whose presence alone the object called smell is smelt and objectified. Okay, that power of smelling parthivena granena is the gauna pranaha here. Then where is this parthivaha granaha, where is this power of smelling? Is a product of the subtlest sattvic aspect of earth element. Where is it placed? Located. Nasika puta antarasthitena. Nasika puta antarasthitam. Mean what? Antarasthitaha. Nasika means nose and putaha means the cavity. This, okay, what, how much cavity you have there? Another cavity. Antara, inside the cavity of the nose, this power of smelling is located. The power of smelling, even if you operate it, you cannot see that. Why? Because it is subtle. It is not available for objectification. Okay, it is located. Nasika puta antarasthitaha granaha parthivaha granaha. A description of organ of smelling. Okay, the power of smelling. The subtle power of smelling, product of the sattvic aspect of earth element, located inside the cavity of the nose. With that, not only that, one more description is there. Antahkarana prana vritti bhyam sahitena. This, one more adjective for this power of smelling. This power of smelling, it is which functions always with the support of two other things. What are they? One is the mind. Okay, antahkarana vritti has to back up any power of smelling, is any power of perception, isn't it? Any organ of perception, organ of knowledge needs to be blessed by the mind. One, and but this nose, the power of smelling, needs the blessings of both mind and the power of the prana also, and the prana also. Because if there's no inhalation and the nose cannot, the organ of smelling cannot, suppose imagine there's no inhalation. Without inhalation, without support of prana, in the form of inhalation, the smelling is not possible. I mean, the power of smelling cannot work as power of smelling. And without the attention of the mind backing it also, whether you are sitting in the stink or fragrance, and then you will not know if you are mentally absent. Therefore, it needs what? It needs the bliss. It needs the support of both this physiological prana and also mind. Antakarna, okay? Prana vritti, antakarna vritti. Both vrittis must be supported. It means what? The power of smelling, which is dependent on the function of inhalation and the attention of the mind in order to be the power of smelling, and which is the product of the sattvic aspect of earth element, and which is located in the cavity of the nose, and which is, okay, this, the power of smelling, the three adjectives are here. So he says here, antahkarana, say now, prana, vrittibhyam, sahitena. For one word granena, you have a long description of the grana. What is granaha means what? Power of smelling. So granena means by the power of smelling, through the power of smelling, with the help of the power of smelling, one cannot smell the Atma. That which cannot be smelt and objectified through the organ of smelling is the Atma. The Atma is Brahman. And what is the organ of smelling? By which, through which the Atma cannot be smelt, that which cannot be smelt as an object. The description of the grana is three sentences, three words there actually. Prativaha granaha, nasika puta antarasthitaha granaha, antakarana prana vrittibhyam sahitaha granaha. Okay? So which is supported, which functions? Be supported by the attention of the mind, and also the mind and the prana, physiological function of inhalation. So through that prana, through that power of smelling, by that power of smelling, using the power of smelling, one cannot smell that which cannot be smelt. One does not smell that. One does not smell that which one does not smell. One doesn't objectify. Yena pranaha praniyate, and that by which prana is revealed. Praniyate. Prana is praniyate means prana is lent life. The power of smelling is lent life, lent existence. It means it's lent, it's revealed how the power of smelling is lent life by Atma. Because Atma is lends existence to the power of smelling by illumining it first. And thereby, it also blesses it with the capacity to illumine the object of smell. Object called smell. Isn't it? Therefore, it is yena pranaha praniyate. Okay, we'll see the next one. Tadeva Brahmatvam Vidhi. We have to see next one. Vrittibhyam Sahitena. Yat na praniti. Again, yanna praniti. That again, Shankaracharya repeats, even though the verse mentions only once yat, Shankaracharya repeats that yat. Yat again is an objective case only. Yat becomes yat na praniti. Yat na praniti means yedai arigiradillayo, okay, that one which one does not reveal, objectify. Gandhavate na vishayi karoti. How any smell or anything which has smell is objectified, okay, objectified. In the same way, that which one does not smell. Atma is that which one does not smell through the organ of smelling, like anything, how one smells anything which has smell, fragrance or smell. Okay? One can smell anything which has fragrance or smell. Gandhavat means what now? Gandhavat, anything which has smell, fragrance. Okay. Na vishayi karoti means does not objectify. One does not objectify the Atma through the organ of smelling, like how one objectifies any object of smell. No. Yena.
Yena.
Chaitanya.
Chaitanya.
Atma Jyotisha.
Atma Jyotisha.
Avabhasyatvena.
Avabhasyatvena.
स्वविषयं प्रति प्राणः प्रणीयते. Now he says, okay, one does not objective, that which one does not objectify through the organ of smelling is Atma, you know. Not that, yena by which Atma alone. So, Chaitanya Atma Jyotisha Avabhasyatvena. So, Chaitanya Atma Jyotish means what? The light of consciousness, okay. The light of consciousness of one's own self. Avabhasyatvena. Avabhasyatvam means what? Being illumined. Having the status of being revealed by consciousness, the Atma. Light of consciousness, the Atma. This organ of smelling, I mean the power of smelling, subtle power of smelling, you know, being, enjoying the status of being illumined, revealed by the light of consciousness. I mean, what being revealed, just simply to make a simple sentence, being revealed by Atma, being brought to light by Atma, thereby being lent existence by Atma. You have to say, being revealed by Atma, thereby being lent existence by Atma. And now, also it's being blessed with the capacity to illumine its object. What now? Svavishayam prati, towards its own object of knowledge. Svavishayam prati, towards its corresponding object or its field of operation. Its corresponding field of operation, towards it, towards its own corresponding field of operation, pranaha praniyate. Okay, prana praniyate means the prana is this prana, here is the power of smelling, is directed towards its own field of operation, towards its own object of perception. Is it how does the power of smelling, you know, is direct, how is it directed towards its own object of object of perception? How is it directed towards its own field of operation? How is it being blessed with the capacity? And not only that, being blessed with the capacity, being lent existence also. How? Being revealed. What is that by which it is revealed, by which it is lent existence, thereby how is it, it is directed towards its own object of perception. It is the Atma, isn't it? Only by Atma, it is revealed by Atma, it is lent existence by Atma, it is directed towards its object also by Atma only. It is blessed with the capacity to illuminate an object also. Isn't it? By Atma. Therefore, tadeva ityadi sarvam samanam. Now, tadeva brahmatvam viddi nedam edam upasate. It is like the previous mantras. Shankaracharya says, I don't want to repeat it. I've already explained it to you. What does mean? Tadeva tvamma brahmiddhi means that witness consciousness alone is, but now you are that witness consciousness, that you the witness consciousness alone is Brahman. You the witness consciousness excluding the body maintenance complex. Is it? Alone is Brahman. Therefore, tad eva tvam, tadeva brahma means a mahavakyam. I told you many times, the word tad stands for you, tvam pada lakshyartha, the implied meaning of the word tvam is pure consciousness excluding the body maintenance complex, is what? Tvam pada lakshyartha is tad, and Brahman is reality, Brahman. Tvam brahma means what now? Tad Chaitanyam, Atmajyotihi, Atmachaitanyam eva, which does not include the body emotions complex, isn't it? Alone is Brahman. Not anything other than that is Brahman. Is it clear? So with this, first section is over. And also, that last mantra is also of the first section also is over. With this, actually, the important teaching of the Kena Upanishad is over. That what do you mean by important teaching? The rest of the teaching was unimportant or what? No. What it means, if a student is Uttama Adhikari, if he is appropriately qualified for Vedanta study, then with this very first chapter itself, he would have become, he would have had the vision. But there are also people like us, thanks to rishis. And they call Madhyama Adhikaranaha, Mandha Adhikaranaha. For them, Mananam also is required. Okay, Shravanam is, Shravanam of Kena Upanishad is over. So Uttama Adhikaris need not go for anything else extra. But for Mandha Adhikaranam, Madhyama Adhikaranam, the mediocre students, I mean, who, you know, the Mananam is required. Therefore, now, for the sake of Mananam of the Mandha Adhikaranaha, the second section of the Kena Upanishad is introduced.
Thank goodness.
Okay. And here, Shankaracharya really helps us, even though we have not studied what Nyaya, Tarka, other philosophers say, etc. Still, he presents what they say and how he negates them, you know, different views of different schools of people, different schools of thought, also negated here. Thereby, it becomes what? Ascertained. So, ascertained means what becomes assimilated, means it becomes clear. When you say clear, it becomes doubt-free. Okay, the vision of the Atma becomes doubt-free. That means, there is a method how to make one's understanding a doubt-free, ascertained understanding. There is a teaching methodology, is there? Sthanu Nikhanana Nyayaha is there. I might have told you many times before, there's so following the sthana nikhanana nyaya, no, there is a mananam is always for, is for, based on sthana nikhanana nyaya. Sthanuhu means a post. Sthano nikhanana nyaya or sthana nikhanana nyaya, I can say. Sthanuhu means a post which doesn't move, okay? It's called sthanu. And then, so, when we want to put a pendal, you first have to have posts. Then on the top of the posts, you can have that. Anything, shamiana, whatever you want to put, you need that. But for which, you have to dig a hole and you put the post. The hole has been already dig, the post has been put in the first chapter. But, is there any doubt? So, is that post which has been put into the hole is shaky or not? Then you have to shake and see. If it is doesn't shake, oh, perfect hole, perfectly fit, doesn't move, Uttama Adhikaris. Okay? But still, after having put into the post, into the hole also what? If you shake it, it moves like this, then this means what? On the top of it, you cannot put pendle. Because you cannot rely on those posts. Because it will fall. The whole thing will fall and damage. Destroy. Therefore, to avoid the damage and destruction caused by later on, okay, the future consequence. For that, to avoid the future undesirable consequences, damaging consequences, what you have to make sure before you start putting anything on the posts, see the posts are very firm. And to see those things, you had to put some sand and some small stones and bits, everything, and so you sprinkle some water there, again hit it nicely, I wish I can show you this thing. And then hit it nicely, and afterwards, again you see, again hit it, again put some more sand and all that, and again shake. And this one point comes, you hit with lots of sand, and the holes have been filled with sand and small stones and bits and water, everything. You hit and hit, and then when you again shake it, it remains firm. You can't shake it. It's called what now? Nikhananam means digging, and sthanuhu means a post. And you put the post, now you shake it, it doesn't move. Firm. Okay? Therefore, based on that sthanu nikhananyaya, mananam is presented in the second section of the Kena Upanishad. Okay? Now, what is the important teaching of the first chapter? Brahman is not an object of knowledge. And I am the subject, and I is subject of knowledge. When you say I the subject of knowledge, what does it mean? Which is ever non-objectifiable. Okay? I the subject of knowledge, never objectify, ever non-objectifiable. I, the ever non-objectifiable subject of knowledge, am Brahman, the consciousness. I, ever non-objectifiable subject of knowledge, the pure consciousness, am Brahman. This is the teaching, important teaching of the first chapter. And for which the first section presents seven Mahavakyams are there. Shrotrasya Shrotram is one Mahavakyam. Then Viditata Aviditata Adi one Mahavakyam. Tadevatvam Abhram Viddhi, Tadevatvam Abhram Viddhi, Tadevatvam Abhram Viddhi. Sorry, Tadeva Brahmatvam Viddhi. Sorry, Tadeva Brahmatvam Viddhi. Tadeva Brahmatvam Viddhi. That's what so many Mahavakyams. So, the first chapter, even though tiniest chapter, has so many Mahavakyams. Every Mahavakyam reveals this fact repeatedly. What is the fact? I, the ever non-objectifiable subject, the consciousness, am Brahman. Now, we are to go to this second chapter.
Yadi manyase
suveda
iti
dabhrameva. Api
Nunam.
Tvam vetha
Brahmano rupam.
Yad asya
Tvam.
Yad asya
Deveshu.
Atha nu
Mimamsyameva
te manye
manye
viditam
viditam.
If anyone says, after having heard this first chapter, having heard thoroughly the first chapter, the student comes and tells, have you all understood? We have understood, they should stop. Yes, we understood Brahman. If they say, teacher will be very upset. Yes, I know Brahman. You taught me very clearly. I know Brahman now. If anybody says, that means the student has not understood Brahman at all. And if somebody comes and tells you, I have directly experienced, I have experienced Brahman directly in my samadhi, through my meditation, if somebody comes and tells also, then we have to quietly come away without asking what, how was it, what was it, etc. Because Brahman is not an object of experience. And here, in this verse, before even I enter into the mantra, if we say, I know, no, Brahman is available for aparoksha jnanam. Brahman is not available for pratyaksha jnanam, not paroksha jnanam, but only aparoksha jnanam. And paroksha jnanam means the indirect knowledge, and pratyaksha jnanam is a direct knowledge. So direct or indirect knowledge is always of an object. So there is never a direct or indirect knowledge is never of anything other than an object. And the knowledge of the, that means knowledge of the subject, knowledge of the subject is not in fact dependent on any instruments of knowledge such as mind and senses. Therefore it is what now, it's the knowledge of the immediate self without the operating anything in between, okay, as instruments of knowledge. That which is arrived at, is it? Through that, how you arrived at, it's called aparoksha jnanam. But still, the aparoksha, there is a misconception. People always have wrong understanding of the word aparoksha jnanam. They think aparoksha jnanam means direct experience. They think aparoksha jnanam also is direct experience. They don't say direct knowledge, direct experience. And so first, before entering into this, aparoksha, what is aparoksha jnanam is made clear in this, actually in Shankara's commentary on this verse. This Shankara's commentary on this verse makes one thing very clear. What is aparoksha jnanam? If we know what is aparoksha jnanam, then we will know what aparoksha jnanam is not also. Then you will know what is pratyaksha jnanam, what is paroksha jnanam also. Then you, that means you will know what is knowledge of Brahman also. Therefore, what is aparoksha jnanam? To know that, see, if people say aparoksha jnanam is direct experience, there are only three possibilities. Look at this. If Brahman is available for its object of direct, I have direct experience of Brahman, means Brahman must be what? Object of experience. Okay, Brahman must be either the direct object of experience. Okay, So the direct experience is that in which, if we say Brahman is available for direct experience, then Brahman, the direct experience is that in which Brahman is the object of experience. Or if the other possibility is, if Brahman is, or Brahman must be the subject of experience. In experience, the experience in which Brahman must be either the object of experience or the subject of experience. Or Brahman must be both subject and object of experience. If you say, if you take this aparoksha jnanam as direct experience, there's only three possibilities that Brahman must be, the aparoksha jnanam must be an experience in which Brahman must be the object of experience, or Brahman must be the subject of experience, or Brahman must be both subject and object of experience. If you say direct experience. And if we analyze these three possibilities, the first is possibility you have to know, it is not. Brahman is never an object of experience. Therefore, Brahman, then that aparoksha jnanam cannot be direct experience of Brahman, means it's not the direct experience of Brahman. Because all the, it is, Brahman is not an object. Therefore, direct experience of Brahman is not possible. Why? Because all the Upanishads say this. Atma is aprameyaha, imperceptible. Atma is adrishyaha, agrahyaha. There are so many mantras which state in other Upanishads that Brahman is, which have established Brahman being not an object. Therefore, the first possibility is not possible. The first possibility has to be ruled out now. And we go to the third one. Can we say then, if Brahman is both subject and object of experience, make sense? It's also not possible. Why? Because that which is the subject cannot be the object. Object, that which is the object, it cannot be the subject. Because even if we say, this hand is touching this hand, if we say it's possible, isn't it? One hand touches the other hand. Then it is the subject, it is the object. At least there will be parts must be there. If Brahman has many parts, then one part of Brahman can go and touch the other part of Brahman. Isn't it? Where Brahman can be both subject and the object. Isn't it? Object and subject and object. Now this hand experiences this hand. That means experiencing, experiencer hand also is me. Experienced hand also is me. Subject and object both are what? Both are experience, isn't it? That's why the subject and object of experience are one and the same person, isn't it? You can say, but it's not possible. Because Brahman is not partful, isn't it? Indivisible, partless. And second thing, if you say anything, any one thing which is a subject of knowledge cannot be the object of knowledge simultaneously. Or, how do you say, if the finger is touching this finger, or anything this finger, the same finger cannot touch itself, isn't it? This finger can touch any other part of the body, the tip of the finger, it cannot touch itself. Now eyes are seeing, means eyes are the seers, but eyes are, is it? The seer, eyes are the seen by something else. but not by themselves. The power of smelling smells, but it is what now? It is smelt by, it is known by something else, but still it cannot, the power of smelling cannot know itself. Can't smell itself. The subject cannot become the object by itself. Cannot be the object. That means what? Subject and object cannot be one and the same. Got it? Therefore, the third possibility of Brahman being both subject and object of experience also is not possible. Brahman being the object of experience also is not possible. But the second possibility, if you analyze, what about Brahman being the subject of experience? That is possible. Brahman, the object of experience, is possible. But subject of experience means, is Brahman the subject of experience in a given experience alone? If Brahman is subject of experience only in a given experience, the subject of the given experience alone is Brahman, if we say, then also we are wrong. Because Brahman is not the subject of a given experience alone, experience of a given object alone. Brahman is the experiencer, the subject of all the experiences. The only subject of all the experiences. Isn't it? Therefore, if Brahman is the only subject of all the experiences, then is that effort necessary at all? Because you know, already it's available, isn't it? Every experience. Okay, so here, if we say this, Brahman is the subject of experience in all the experiences, then we don't need to make effort, is it? Already there. Therefore, you cannot say, that's also correct. Even though Brahman is the subject of all the subject, all the experiences, in the same mantra, the open the part, the same second chapter, there's a fourth mantra wherein it is said, Pratibodha Viditam Matam. Bodha means experience, knowledge. Pratibodha Viditam means what? So that which is obtained, that which is available in all the experiences. The one unchanging, invariably present experiencer in all the variable experiences. Pratibodha Viditam, isn't it? That means if it is already known, then why should we make effort to know Brahman then? Brahman, there is experiencer, isn't it? If anybody says, I have direct experience of Brahman, these are all these possible questions for you. What is Brahman for you? Direct experience means, if I say I have direct experience of Brahman, then Brahman must be object of experience, like this computer or light or smell or sound or taste. If it is not, because Upanishads have negated, Brahman is not an object of experience. Therefore, Brahman is not an object. Okay. Then can you say that Brahman is both subject and object of experience? No. One cannot be subject and object simultaneously. And the subject cannot be object, object cannot be subject. It is logically understood. Then can we say that Brahman is subject of experience? Because in experience means you have to say direct experience of Brahman means either Brahman must be subject or must be object or must be both. If both are, I mean, there's no experience, isn't it? You can't say that. So you cannot say, if Brahman is already the subject of experiences, all the experiences, because Brahman is not the subject of only given experience, subject only in a given experience. And Brahman is subject of all the experiences, means is already available, then why should you make effort to know Brahman? Is it? Therefore, I experienced Brahman or I experienced Brahman directly. If anybody says, that means they have not really understood Brahman. Brahman is neither the subject of experience nor the object of experience. Brahman is not subject and object of experience. In this context, we have to be very careful. So what is this Brahman then? When you say Atma, you know, the Chaitanyam which excludes, you know, with the consciousness, the pure consciousness, excluding the body, excluding the mind, excluding the pranas, all the subtle aspects, the pure consciousness alone is Atma, and that Atma alone is Brahman. Because consciousness does not have experience. Consciousness does not have experience. Consciousness does not see, does not hear, does not smell, does not taste, and consciousness does not experience, does not know also. For you to say consciousness knows also, for you to say, it must be because knowing is a process and experiencing is a process. Consciousness, does not go through any, is not involved in any processing. Therefore, even you can't say consciousness does not experience, does not say, I experience. But we have to, therefore, what now? We have to use the mind for us to say, consciousness is free from experiences. Consciousness does not experience, free from experiences, free from perceptions. And the pure consciousness is Brahman, which is completely free from these threefold bodies. We exclude these three, sarira trayam, apancha koshas. Exclude all of them. The pure consciousness alone you take as Atma, which is Brahman. But for you to say, you need to understand, you need to use the mind. We have to use the mind, use the experience, states of experience, but negate that. Cognitively exclude that mind and take into account only the pure consciousness. You have to use the mind, because consciousness does not speak, does not say. I told you many times in the class also, consciousness is not dependent on mind for its existence, but consciousness is dependent on mind to become manifest. So consciousness, Brahman always not dependent on Maya for its existence, the Shakti, the power. But consciousness, Brahman is dependent on Maya to become manifest. See, I'll tell again an example. Listen to me. When I say there is light and there is this opaque mic. Light is one indivisible, partless whole, equally pervasive everywhere. See, in the presence of light, the opaque object comes to light. This opaque object called mic is absolutely dependent on the existence of light to become, to be illumined, thereby to have the status of being existent. In the absence of light, the mic will not, even though mic is existent, it does not have a status of being existent because it remains unknown. It becomes unknown, unrevealed. Being unrevealed is being as good as non-existent. So being revealed is having the status of being existent. Isn't it? Therefore, the light, the opaque mic, to have the status of being existent, to have existence through by being illumined is dependent on light, is it dependent on light? So such an opaque object cannot bring this light into existence, cannot illumine the light. This itself being dependent on light to be illumined. How can opaque object illumine the light? Okay, one thing. And you may suppose in the absence of opaque things, there is light. In the presence of the opaque objects, there is light, and that light is what? Reflected light. There is no such thing called reflected light, but light is given this adjective reflected light in the presence of opaque objects. Why? Because every object only by reflecting the light, by being revealed by the light, comes to light, is it? Comes into existence. Every opaque object reflects the light. Therefore, from the standpoint of the opaque object, light gets the adjective reflected light, name reflected light. And in the absence of opaque objects, is there light or not? Is there any change on the part of the light? In the absence of opaque objects also, there is light, the same light continues to be there. Then that light, you cannot call that light reflected light. Why? Because there is no object which reflects the light. But that light is what? Pure light. There is no such thing called pure light or reflected light. What is there is only the light. But the light gets two different names as pure light and reflected light. Because of this reflecting media, the opaque objects. The presence and the absence, you know, adds the adjectives to the light. As pure and reflected. But when the light, there is a pure light, you never consider the existence of light. Even though light is so important, it is because of the light alone we see everything here. Every opaque object is, the experience of every opaque object is possible because of the experience and because of the presence of existence of light. But even though light is so important, light is that because of the presence of which alone every opaque object shines, the perception of all the open objects is possible. Perceptions of different objects are possible. But the light without the objects becomes what now? Is never considered, is it? Is never draw our, doesn't draw our attention. Isn't it? Imagine if there's light without the objects, does not draw our attention. But in the presence of the opaque object, helps us, you know, draws our attention to the light. Therefore, we can say, in the absence of opaque objects, light is what? As a pure light, is not capable of drawing our attention. But the light is capable of drawing our attention, is it? In the presence of the opaque object. That does not mean light is dependent on the opaque object to come to light. So use the opaque object to know, understand, to arrive at light. But even having arrived at light also, negate the opaque object, distinguish the light, understand the light being free from the opaque object, light being independent of the opaque object for its existence. The opaque object only is light is dependent on opaque object to become the reflected light, to become the manifest light. But light is not dependent on the opaque object to come to light. Light is not dependent on the opaque object to come to light for its existence. Whereas light is dependent on opaque object to become the reflected light. As a reflected light, it is known. As a pure light, isn't it? It is. It is not recognized. Is this clear now? In the same way, the mind, now let us come to this now. The pure consciousness is not dependent on the mind, antahkaranam, or experience to come to light. But pure consciousness is dependent on experience to become the manifest. It means what? For pure consciousness dependent on the mind to become manifest. For manifestation, consciousness, Atma, the Chaitanyam is dependent on the mind. But for existence, consciousness is not dependent on the mind. Okay? But we mistake. Atma is dependent on the mind for manifestation. But we mistake that Atma is dependent on the mind for existence. Therefore, and we also wait for the experience of the Atma. Atma is Nitya Upalabdhi, ever experienced. Atma is ever experienced. If we say it's object of experience, there is a Kala, Desha, Vartamana, Nimittam, isn't it? Experience of given object is dependent on given time, given place, given situation. Whereas which situation, which time, which place, which, you know, is Atma dependent on to become experienced. when there is experience also, Atma is. There is no experience also, Atma is. In the presence of experience, Atma is. In the absence of experience also, Atma is. Illumining the presence and the absence of experiences. You leave objects of experience, you can leave now. You can just take only experience now. You do not think about the objects of experience. Just the experiences. The presence of experience, Atma is. The absence of experience also, Atma is. Therefore, Atma is not an object of experience. Only Atma is available for recognition as the subject of experience in all the experiences, you can say. But having arrived at Atma, you cannot say Atma is even subject of experience. Like what? You cannot say, light is the illuminator of all the opaque objects here. If you say, you may think you are right, light is the illuminator of all the opaque objects here. If you say, is light the experiencer of illuminator of all the opaque objects here? Is it? Yes, if we say no. To be the illuminator, what action does the light do? If we say, I am the seer of television, means you have to get up from your place, go and turn the television on, come back and see, take the remote and then show all your mental restlessness on the remote, and then you must be said, only then you are a watcher of television. Otherwise you are not a watcher, isn't it? That so many actions are there. And eater also means what? Had to get up and go and take the plate and put the food and then sit and then see and then munch and then gulp. So many things you have to do. So many actions are there. So for one to be, to say that eater, doer, runner, etc., there must be action. Only then you can say, isn't it, the performer of given action. But illumining, if you say light is the illuminator, light does not, perform the action of illumination. It is a performance. It is not action. It is not operation. Understand? No operation, no action, no performance. Then what is it then? Presence. Mere presence. Therefore, we cannot call the light as the illuminator of all the opaque objects. But you search for that, what is that because of which is every opaque object shines? There must be, if it shines means it is illumined. If it is illumined means there is an illuminator. And there is an illuminator means, and what is the illuminator? You search for it. There is no illuminator at all other than the light. You search for the illuminator, stumble upon the light, then stop there. There is no illuminator or whatsoever. There is only light. Similarly, you search for the experiencer. There is experience, so many experiences of so many things. The experiences vary. And each experience is possible. What is that? Because of whose presence the experience is possible. There must be an experiencer because of whose presence alone experience is possible. Waking. In waking, varieties of prati bodha viditam. Isn't it? In every experience. Every experience is a proof for the experiencer being there. And in the whole waking goes, the dream goes, in the deep sleep state, continuously there's a And each experience is but a mutual, excluding the other experience. And each experience is also what now? It's not continuous. One experience has to become discontinuous for other experience to begin. And each experience also excludes the other, means all the experiences are mutually exclusive also. Therefore, in all of them, what is that experiencer without whose presence, without the presence of which experience is not possible at all? You search for the experiencer and you stumble upon what? The consciousness, pure consciousness. There is no experiencer other than consciousness. You arrive at it, then you cannot say consciousness is the subject of experience also. To arrive at the consciousness, you use the experience, and then having arrived consciousness, then they say what? Exclude the experience, take only the consciousness as the Atma. Use the, what is mind? Experience you have to use. You get it, what I'm saying? I think that is very important and subtle, I'm saying. See, the whole Bhashyam is so beautiful, it's going to come actually. I'm only introducing. Shankara writes a very important introduction for this. I have not yet gone to that actually. So, here what is this? Now, can we say that even experiencer? Can you say Atma is subject of experience? Atma is available for direct experience because as a subject of experience. If you say Atma is available for direct experience, if you mistake this word, not mistake, if you take this word, you know, with aparoksha jnanam, Atma jnanam is aparoksha jnanam, not pratyaksha jnanam, not paroksha jnanam. And if you, people may mistake the aparoksha jnanam for direct experience of Brahman. Brahman must be either the subject or the object or the subject and object. So Brahman is not the subject and object. Brahman is not the object. Brahman is not even the subject. Even though in the same Upanishad there is a mantra which states Brahman is there, you know, invariably present in all the variable thoughts, variable experiences, variable thoughts. Then every variable, in every experience, there is an experiencer. The experiences vary, but the experiencer does not vary. Upanishad says that. Therefore, can you say then that even though there's only for understanding, for the purpose of understanding, arriving at consciousness, you are using that experience. Upanishad is using that word experience. Using that mind. Experience is mind, isn't it? Experience is mind. Knowledge is mind. Experience is mind. So we are using the mind. We are using the, we have to. We can't just say, oh, Atma is not mind, throw away. We don't need, it's useless. We can't afford to, you know, really disrespect and ignore anything as useless. Use it, but don't overvalue it. Isn't it? So use the experience. Use it. Use your mind. Use the experience to arrive at the experiencer. Thereafter, what now? Exclude the mind. And when you exclude the mind, you can say there is no such thing called experiencer. Okay? There is of course an experiencer, but that experience, Atma, is not the experiencer. When you arrive at the consciousness, because consciousness does not experience. Why you can't say consciousness? Why you can't say Atma is the subject of experience? Subject of experience means you should say Atma is the experiencer. For you to say Atma is the experiencer, Atma should experience. Like how I say I am the seer, that means I am seeing. Is Atma experiencing? No. Atma is not experiencing. Atma does not experience. In Brihadaranyaka Upanishad, we have to say, is Atma the seer? Atma is the ultimate seer. Atma is the ultimate hearer. Atma is the ultimate smeller. Atma is the ultimate taster. Atma is the ultimate toaster also. Listen, Atma is ultimate experiencer. Because without which, that does not mean, even though you use the word ultimate experiencer, ultimate knower, ultimate seer, ultimate hearer. Why? Because Atma does not experience, Atma does not know, Atma does not hear, smell, taste anything, Atma does not do anything. But still, without Atma, mind cannot be have the status of being the knower. These sense organs cannot be the seer, hearer, etc. Therefore, ultimate seer is Atma, we can say. But really speaking, Atma is not even the subject of experience. To arrive at Atma, we are guided to search for the experiencer. Then we'll stumble upon the Atma. Then you resolve the word experiencer in Atma, the consciousness. Then say, this pure consciousness, because of whose presence the very experience is possible, is the Atma, you can say. You cannot say, okay, therefore, you cannot say, aparoksha jnanam is equal to direct experience. Have you got it now? Aparoksha jnanam is not a direct experience. So, can anyone say, I have direct experience of Brahman? Okay, you cannot say, suppose somebody is waiting for direct experience of Brahman, also is what? Upanishad only pities them. You be waiting here. Like in our movies, the hero is waiting, not knowing the dead why the lover not being dead, waiting her arrival. He'll never come back. He's already died. Like this, you know. Some Bollywood, anybody. This is the only theme in all the movies. Okay? Most of the movies show this. This is emotionally blackmail people who watch. And then make them more emotional. Already confused, become more confused. It's easy, you know, to confuse the already confused, isn't it?
Yeah.
And then totally rotten, okay? Let it also, if somebody says, I am practicing meditation, I am going to experience Brahman one day, because there's a promise that meditation is the only way for experiencing Brahman. Okay, well and good, go and practice, keep on waiting, and you will, if at all you experience, you will not experience Brahman, maybe other Bhuta Pishacha you can experience, but not Brahman. If you will never experience Brahman, even if you experience, that is not Brahman. Yes, you may have experience, result of meditation, but that what is experienced is not Brahman. Okay? What is experienced is not Brahman. Let's go to the Bhashyam. Evam. Heya. Upadeya. Viparita. Viparitaha. Tvam Atma Brahma Iti Pratyayitaha Sishyaha Aham Yeva Brahma Iti Sushtu Veda. Aham iti ma grinniyat. इति आशंक्य आह आचार्य शिष्य बुद्धि विचालनार्थम यदि इत्यादि सात मुद ओके द मंत्र द फर्स्ट मंत्र सेकंड सेक्शन बिगिन्स विद द वर्ड यदि टुडे व्हाट यू हैव अंडरस्टूड एन इंपॉर्टेंट लेसन वन कैन नॉट हैव डायरेक्ट एक्सपीरियंस ऑफ ब्रह्मन वन कैन नॉट से आई हैव डायरेक्ट एक्सपीरियंस ऑफ ब्रह्मन because direct experience of brahman means brahman must be either the object or the subject or subject and object and brahman is not anything that is why okay even though upanishad says brahman is available for recognition as the subject of knowledge in one's own mind as one's own self it says After understanding, once you have real vision, then you understand is not even, is it, subject. Therefore, it's not experience, it's not possible. That's the main teaching, okay, one lesson. And here, the yadi shabda, yadi, why, yadi manyase suveda iti. Oh my student, if you think you know Brahman, then what happens then that I know means aham must be only it exclude when you say aham brahmasmi that aham must be what definitely should exclude mind like exclude my body mind and complex only pure consciousness must be the bhagatyaga lakshana isn't it bhagatyaga lakshana means what now you remove the isn't it You remove the other aspects of the individual, body once complex, take only the consciousness as aham, and that aham shabdartha is what? Brahman. So, heya upadeya viparitaha tvam. Heya upadeya viparitaha means what? That which is distinct from both, no? Heya and Upadeya, undesirable, rejectable object and acceptable, choosable, you know, desirable object. Acceptable, desirable object, undesirable, rejectable object. Heya, Upadeya. Okay, both are what now? Different from Atma, you this here. Tvam Atma, you are Atma, which is distinct and different from the rejectable, undesirable object of experience, and also the desirable, acceptable object of experience. And Brahma, Atma, your consciousness alone is Brahman. Iti Pratyayitaha. Pratyayitaha means what now? Now has have been revealed. Pratyayitaha, the student has been now revealed. This Brahman, the student is revealed now. He is taught. Pratyayitaha means what now? He has been taken. He has been made to arrive at. He could not arrive at Brahman. Now he has been helped to arrive at Brahman. As what? Brahman as the Atma, which is different from any object. Known and the unknown, which is now cause and effect, manifest and unmanifest, desirable and undesirable objects. The pure, what is different from the object is subject, and the subject is what? What that Brahman is shown as that which is neither an object, different from the objects, therefore as a subject it is shown, but because it has been shown as a subject, That which is different from object is subject. The Brahman is a subject. Isn't it? Therefore, iti sishyaha ahameva brahma iti sushtu veda. And what should be his understanding? I myself am the unobjectifiable subject and the consciousness Brahman. It will be students clear understanding, isn't it? It must be his understanding. But even though he says subject, it does not mean we should take Atma as the available for experience as the subject. Atma is that because of which any experience is possible. You can't take Atma as subject of experience and object of experience. Do I confuse you? Okay. If I don't confuse you, I'm very happy. If I confused you, I'm sorry. I'll see next. Okay, because it's all next now. We'll go the next class. The next class. Next class will start. Don't miss any of you, okay? See that next Monday, please don't have any other program. Please come to the class.
Can I just ask something?
Yeah.
There is an object and there is a subject. If the subject isn't the Atma, is it the mind?
Yeah. Mind is subject always. Mind becomes only from the standpoint of Atma. As mind is subject. The subject means only for understand relatively. There's no subject of division itself is not there now. Subject, object, division also is resolved in Atma. Because it dissolves the very duality later on. Only relatively, everything is relative. Yes, say eyes are the subject from the standpoint of an object, isn't it? The standpoint of the mind, eyes become the object. The standpoint of Atma, mind becomes subject.
But it's like, I mean, it's so interesting, the difference, because you said on Saturday, you said, as far as the creation is concerned, Ishvara Srishti, there is no first creation.
Yeah.
And I thought, no, that's rubbish. That is absolute rubbish, because there is always a first. And then I realised, actually, no, that's the way we look at things in the world. But from this knowledge, this knowledge of Atma Brahma, it's completely different. And there is no first and second and last.
And relative. Everything is relative. First, second, all these things are relative.
Mm-hmm.
But really speak, with reference to the creation, that is the very purpose of Anupravesha Shruti. It's called Anupravesha Shruti in Taittiriya. Which the day I started. I saw and stopped also. That's also a very impressive place where I stopped it that day. Atma Chandi, I was very tired. Actually speaking, Anupravesha Shruti is so well explained by Shankara. To see that there's no creation. There's only manifestation. And it's a continuous thing. But to help you that, you have to talk about it, no? It's created everything. Because there's no create other than Brahman. There's no vastu other than Brahman. There's no reality. There's no substance other than reality, Brahman. Therefore, if you say the whole prapancha is there, it must, if the what is the only substance means, it must have come from where? When you say, you show me the bread, and you say, the only substance before the bread came into existence was, this wheat flour means, I can easily make out. This bread, even though I did not see how the bread has come into existence from that wheat flour, so from wheat flour, this must have come into existence. Isn't it? The same way, if you say vastu, the substance, that which is only reality, is Brahman means. The whole prapancha is what now? Must have manifested from where? From that only. Therefore, you call it first the creator. And thereafter, you say, no, creator means what? How? There's no creator, isn't it? Brahman is not the creator. But there's no creator other than Brahman. And for Brahman to have the status of being the creator, it must have the power. Well, the power, you have to talk about the power. That's why we call that name. Then immediately you should switch on to the word Ishvara. We don't say Brahman, okay? Brahman with its creative power as Ishvara. As the Lord. When does that status come? Brahman as Ishwara status, the lordship. Only when it exhibits its power, isn't it? Brahman, with his power as Ishwara, created the universe. And having created, entered into the universe also. Entered into everything. And became one of the created objects also. As I said. Okay, I'll cheat later on. When we Daitriya Masa will follow this, Saturday will become very clear. Om Purnamada Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vasishyate. Om Shanti 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 Harihi Om Tat Sat Sri Gurubhyo Namaha Harihi Om.